So we're jumping in this morning to our fall series, which is going to be on the Ten Commandments. Jim read for us this morning the first 16 verses of Psalm 119. That is, fun fact, the longest book of the entire Bible. It would take us close to an hour to sit here and hear it read from beginning to end. It is a very long book. And in Hebrew, the first line begins with the next letter of the Hebrew alphabet. It is an acrostic poem, and it is all about how good God's law is. So over the next 11 weeks, you're going to be hearing the full reading of Psalm 119, 10 to 15 verses at a time, a manageable little chunk. And we are also going to be hearing the Ten Commandments according to the book of Exodus. So today we're going to hear all of them together, and in future weeks we'll just take one at a time to reflect on. So we're going to start in Exodus chapter 19. At the third moon, after the Israelites had gone out from the land of Egypt, on that very day they came into the wilderness of Sinai. They had journeyed from Rephidim, entering the wilderness of Sinai, and camped in the wilderness. Israel camped there in front of the mountain. Then Moses went up to God. The Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, "Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the Israelites, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, therefore, if you obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession out of all the peoples. Indeed, the whole earth is mine, but you shall be for me a priestly kingdom, a holy nation. These are the words that you shall speak to the Israelites." So Moses came, summoned all the elders of the people, and sat before them all the words that the Lord had commanded him. The people answered as one, "Everything that the Lord has spoken, we will do." Moses reported the words of the people to the Lord. So the Lord said to Moses, "I am going to come to you in a dense cloud in order that the people may hear what I speak with you and so trust you ever after." Then the Lord spoke all these words, "I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol, whether in the form of anything that is in heaven above or on the earth beneath or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing children for the iniquity of parents to the third and fourth generation of those who reject me, but showing steadfast love to the thousandth generation of those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not make wrongful use of the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not acquit anyone who misuses the name. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. For 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but on the seventh day it is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shall do not any work. You, your son or your daughter, your male or female slave, your livestock, or the alien resident in your town. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, but rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and consecrated it. Honor your father and mother, so that your days may be long in the land the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or male or female slave, or ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. When all the people witnessed the thunder and lightning, the sound of the trumpet and the mountains smoking, they were afraid, and they trembled and stood at a distance. And they said to Moses, "You speak to us, and we will listen, but do not let God speak to us, or we will die." Moses said to the people, "Do not be afraid, for God has come only to test you and to put the fear of God upon you so that you do not sin." The people stood at a distance, and Moses drew near to the thick darkness where God was. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Now, when I was a kid growing up at First Press Spokane, I was heavily incentivized to memorize certain parts of the Bible. And by heavily incentivized, I mean king-size candy bars, which were the gold standard of incentivizing me as a child. The Beatitudes, the fruits of the Spirit, the books of the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament in order, the family trees of the patriarchs and the matriarchs of the book of Genesis, and of course the Ten Commandments. Once, I'm pretty sure it was for the Beatitudes when I had to memorize those. I remember that I didn't quite have them by the time church started on Sunday morning, so during the sermon, I desperately wrote down a little cheat sheet for myself on the pink fabric cover that I zipped around my third grade Bible, and I remember that I held it sort of preciously in front of my chest while reciting the Beatitudes and occasionally glancing down, hoping my teacher wouldn't notice, and she didn't. I got my candy bar. But 2.5 decades later, I still feel guilty for cheating on the Beatitudes, so I'm not really sure the candy bar was worth it. The Ten Commandments were probably the easiest because they were seemingly so simple. This list of things we should do and things we should not do. Don't steal, don't commit adultery, don't bear false witness and cheat on your Beatitudes test. Things that I memorized easily, and I'm sure many of you in your Sunday school classes might have as well. I would sort of treat them in my head a bit like a checklist of sorts, right? Like, you memorize these rules and you keep them and you're fine. Like, you go to bed at night, good job, Kel, you didn't murder anyone today. Check that box and sleep soundly. But of course, we would not be spending 11 weeks on the Ten Commandments if there weren't a lot more to them. Real depth to be plumbed, not just ethically or morally, but what do these commandments say about who we are and who God is? So we're going to start this week with a little bit of a flyby, a high-level overview of what the commandments are and where they sit in the history of Israel. And if you take only two things from my sermon today, this is what I want you to remember. I want you to remember the questions that we are going to ask of the commandments, and I want you to remember the context that the commandments were given in. So we're going to actually start with a little trivia, and then we'll come to those two things. Little trivia about the Ten Commandments. There's a lot out there, but the first that's particularly interesting is that Catholics and Lutherans, Jewish communities, and good Reformed folks like Presbyterians, we all have different ways of numbering the Ten Commandments. We can't actually agree on what the Ten Commandments are. Everyone sort of agrees on the total content of the Ten Commandments, but there's really kind of 11 ideas that we want to shove into Ten Commandments, so we all differ on which of the two things we shove together into one commandment. You can look up the lists on Wikipedia and compare them later if you're particularly interested. The Ten Commandments are actually the only laws in the Bible which are given twice. They're listed in Exodus chapter 20, which you heard this morning, and then they're repeated again in Deuteronomy chapter 5, right as the people are on the precipice of going into the promised land. The commandments are the only laws in Scripture that are given directly by the voice of the Lord to the people of Israel. Now, when we often imagine the law, we think of like scenes from Charlton Heston where like Moses goes up onto the mountain and Moses talks to God and then comes back down and writes down the commandments and gives them to the people. But that isn't the case for the Ten Commandments. As we heard in the passage this morning, God actually comes down in this thick, terrifying cloud full of lightning and thunder and the sound of trumpets, and God speaks the laws directly to the people of Israel, and they are terrified, and they say, Moses, never let that happen again. You go talk to the cloud. Do not bring the cloud to us. When the Ten Commandments are written down, again, they're unlike the laws that Moses wrote out onto the scrolls or whatever he used. The Ten Commandments were written onto the stone tablets directly by the finger of God, the story tells us. And later, when they're stored for safekeeping, the Ten Commandments are placed into the Ark of the Covenant, while all the other laws written by Moses onto the scroll are simply rolled up and set to the side of the Ark. we get this picture about the Ten Commandments, not just that they're first and therefore important, but there's something different about them, that they are physically set apart from the other laws that are given to the people of Israel. We start to get this idea that there's something foundational or primal about these rules given to the people by God. They're highlighted and repeated and put in a place of honor. There's something special about them. Now, later scholars in the Jewish tradition would spend thousands of years parsing these Ten Commandments into 613 mitzvot, or rules, to help with precise and good living. Because really, what does it actually mean not to murder? Is it just talking about people, or does it include animals? What about war? Is war an act of murder, or is it justified? What about self-defense or involuntary manslaughter? Are those included in the commandments? None of these rules is as simple as it appears. And so this is the first thing I want you to remember for today. It comes from our good buddy John Calvin, the sort of progenitor of our theological tradition, the Reformed Church. Calvin loved the commandments. They were recited by his congregation almost every Sunday morning in worship for his entire ministry. There was a common practice in the Christian church, actually, until about 150 years ago, that congregations would together recite the commandments. But that sort of fell out of vogue when we decided that might be a bit too legalistic of all of us to sit around and do. But Calvin loved them. He preached on them, he wrote about them, he wove them into his liturgy. Calvin loved the commandments. And his major contribution was an introduction of a rubric for how we should think about this dusty old list of thou shalts and thou shalt nots. Calvin said there were two questions every commandment raises within us. The first question is somewhat easier than the second. The first is, what does this commandment actually say? And for most of the commandments, that is, what does the commandment say we should not do? So in the case of the final commandment, it says, do not covet. And so we might somewhat easily note that that commandment has a negative force. It tells us not to do something. It's negative toward jealousy, covetousness, envy. So I shouldn't look over at my neighbor's beautiful green grass and burn with envy about the lovely lawn next door. Thankfully, that's an easy commandment for me to keep because I just don't care that much about lawns. You know, don't envy. We can do that. But then Calvin said that first question, what does the commandment say? It's not enough. He continued on and said there's a second question. What is the opposite meaning of the commandment? He actually wrote it this way. He said, we must derive an argument on the other side in this manner. If it pleases God, the opposite displeases God. If it displeases, then the opposite pleases God. If God commands this, then God forbids the opposite. Or if God forbids this, then God enjoins the opposite. So in our example, Calvin would say it's not merely enough not to covet or envy your neighbor's lawn, but beyond that, you must seek the opposite. In this case, not just don't envy, but perhaps seek what is good and best for my neighbor. Maybe I buy them a lovely bag of fertilizer, their favorite brand, and take it over for their lawn. I seek their well-being beyond simply not envying or coveting that which they have. I seek the flourishing of their life. Or with, you know, another famous commandment, Calvin would say, it's all well and good that we can go through most of our days not committing the casual murder here and there, but beyond that, we must seek a wholeness and a fullness of life for others around us. And that is substantially more difficult than simply not killing them. What does the commandment say we must not do, and what does the commandment then imply we must do? And in the context of the commandments and when they were given, I think that these questions will help them come into focus. We're going to ask ourselves these questions every week for the next 10 weeks as we look at the commandments. But the context is the other piece that we're going to keep in front of ourselves. So the commandments came to the people of Israel right as they were crossing out of their hundreds of years enslaved in Egypt. It takes place toward the end of the book of Exodus, if you're following along in your Bibles. Now, if you remember, the Hebrew people, the Israelites, had been enslaved by the Egyptians for generations, as far back as they could remember. Any previous life had been all but erased from their memories. And all of a sudden, this guy Moses shows up, and God's power through Moses allows them to escape slavery in Egypt. And here they are, following this weirdo across the dry bottom of the Red Sea, which has been split into a desert. They're a free people. But very quickly, the question starts to arise for them. Do they want to be a free people? What does it mean to be free? Who are we if not enslaved people? What is our task if not building and surviving? Very quickly, the people start complaining. We should go back to Egypt. It was better there because even though we were enslaved, at least we had food and we weren't following this weirdo Moses who doesn't seem to know any better than the rest of us what we're up to. And it's into this context that God speaks the commandments. God answers directly with this list of rules and ideas. And we're going to think about them over the autumn, not just as rules that we ought to follow in order to be good moral beings, but instead in the way that God spoke them to the newly freed Hebrew people. These are God's spoken hopes and dreams for God's chosen and beloved community. God is speaking these as an act of love for the people. The people keep asking, who are we? And God says, no, 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 your first question shouldn't be, who are we? It's, who am I? I am the Lord your God. I am the one who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. And because I love you and because I have chosen you, here is how you should live. Be kind to one another. Seek life. Listen for my words. Follow only me. Honor your elders. Speak honestly with one another. Follow these rules and you will find life. Now, these might feel like ancient questions that the people were dealing with, but I actually was struck by the fact that these are questions we are dealing with today in 2019 in the United States. This is a question of our own country. Here in the United States, this year marks the 400th anniversary of slavery in the United States. You might have seen this pop up in the New York Times or other places as the 1619 Project, marking the first slave ship to come to the United States from Africa. Now, if you look at the history of North America, slavery actually extends even beyond that. We have at least 339 years of known slavery in this nation. Slavery first of the indigenous people, and later of Africans and others who were brought in. Following 339 years of slavery, there were 89 years of legal segregation and Jim Crow laws in our country. Since then, there have been 65 years where segregation is technically illegal by law, but certainly not banished in practice. This is a live question for us as well. We're not so far removed from the Israelites asking the questions, who are we if not enslaved people? But our question is a little more complicated because there are some who would rightly ask, who are we if not segregated, if not enslaved, if not people who come from a lineage of bondage? But then there are many of us, myself included, whose question becomes, who am I if not the person who has benefited from that system, whose life and whose wealth, whose education and history was built up by the hands of those who were enslaved? These are modern questions, and the Ten Commandments can become part of God speaking into that story in our own midst. This is less than one lifetime since legal segregation, and less than two life expectancies since slavery. This is not far away. These questions are not ancient. They are modern for us today as well. And so I hope that in looking at the Ten Commandments, we will come to find that these laws are not simply a list of do's and don'ts, but instead a blueprint for what it means to be God's beloved community, a call to live faithfully in response, not to the black and white demands of God, but in response to God's choosing and loving and blessing. This is not a list of laws written so that we can go about being mindless drones day to day checking our boxes. These are laws that are written for people who desire to live out of gratitude. Out of gratitude for what God has done, out of gratitude for God's love and choosing. What shall we do? What shall we not do? God says right here, you will be a free people. And you are set free to live as my beloved community. So live first out of gratitude. Amen.